Welcome to another episode of Chats with Clark. I'm your host, Joe Clark here. And you know, at Chats with Clark, we get straight to the point. And the point for this episode is Sean Flannery. Sean, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Joe, I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on here today, taking some time to have me on. So I'm excited to get this thing rolling. I've listened to a few of your podcasts so far, so I know you do a great job. And like I said, I just appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. I appreciate you being here. I'm excited to just talk to you and kind of hopefully spark some light on some cool topics, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I'm an open book, so don't be afraid to ask anything. Like I said to you before, if I don't like a question, I might get a rude answer. You might get a rude answer. But other than that, like, I'm an open book. So go ahead.
Perfect. I think even the rude answers would be exciting. So
that's excellent. It'll spark an interesting conversation. That's for
yeah.
Sure.
So Sean and I both grew up in Cleveland. But Sean, do you want to talk us maybe specifically more about your background and the years before knowing you and that kind of thing? Just give us a little bit of who you are.
So I originally grew up in Westlake, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland. My father, who, you know, the big part about me, a lot of people understand now, is basketball is basically my life at this point. And the reason I basically got into that is, you know, because of my father, who's a high school basketball coach at the school I attended, St. Ed's, which your rival, I'm sorry to bring that up, but
yeah, it's true.
So I went to St. Ed's. Growing up with aspirations of being in the NBA. But when I looked in the mirror, realized I was 5'8". I quickly realized and came to light that that was not going to happen. But I played high school basketball for my father. I grew a love for the game of basketball, realized it could take me to places. I've been to Las Vegas, I've been to Colorado, I've been to California, I've been overseas a few times or once or whatever, but it's taken me places already at 23 that I never really thought I would be able to, you know, explore at such a young age. And I'm thankful for it. I graduated from St. Ed's, went to John Carroll with you, had a great 4-year experience there.
So
playing basketball. And then, that's the biggest thing is looking back on it now, it just went so quickly.
Yeah.
I appreciate everything that, you know, St. Ed's and John Carroll has done for me, because I think the big thing for me is like St. Ed's was never a choice. It was just kind of like, I'm going to go there since like the day I was born, and I loved it. I loved every second of it. I'm sure people say the same about, or I know people say the same about Ignatius. So they're both great schools, but John Carroll, obviously going to college is like a bigger choice. And, I took time and I actually went to Gannon my freshman year. And then about a week or two into that, I knew I was at the wrong place, went to John Carroll and met some great people, had a lot of great experiences. And it was honestly, I could say to this day, is probably the best decision I made was, you know, attending John Carroll. And I think people say that, but like, I 100% mean that. And that's I met some great people. I made great relationships, and, you know, it's showing here today, you know, being on your podcast and doing something special like this.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, dude. You hooped. I mean, like you said, you met all these people, you hooped for all those years, those 8 years, you got to play under your dad at Ed's, that's sick. And then of course, keeping that Cleveland connection when you came back to Carroll is, it feels like it was meant to be kind of thing. It feels like that is fitting for your story.
Absolutely. You know, like, my dad is kind of a well-known person in Cleveland, and, you know, he does stuff
like a celebrity, like not to interrupt, but like,
I would never say that
as a Clevelander who's not your dad's son. I would say he's kind of like a celebrity.
Well, I'm sure he'll appreciate that, but I will never tell him that to his face. But, you know, he's well-known, and, growing up as his son and then playing basketball for him, there's some expectations. And then there's also people that, you know, like to scrutinize a little bit, which is, you know, well-deserved, especially if you're the coach's son, you know, you get that everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the biggest thing just from that aspect is like the way he handled it really showed me, you know, one, how great of a father he was and how great of a coach he was. But like, it was just, you know, it was a perfect experience for me. And then, like you said, staying within Cleveland, going to John Carroll, the community of John Carroll is so enormous. Like it's a small school up in Cleveland, but like, you know, you think about it and you kind of, once you graduate, you realize like there's John Carroll people everywhere. And
so true. Like, so
it's,
true.
It's great being from Cleveland and kind of getting that home experience, you know, and sticking around Cleveland. But like, if you really want the John Carroll experience, like there's people in Texas from John that went to California, like there's guys everywhere. There's females everywhere. Like, it's just, you know, it's a great school. And I, like I said, I'm really appreciative of what it's done for me. And, you know, it went way too fast.
Way too fast. Dude, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, great. So thanks for the little background, Sean. When you look at your high school years, right, you're hooping and and that's just rigorous too, like very rigorous school, you know, academically. And of course, I'm sure from a basketball standpoint too, what were some of the foundational memories that you have? Do you have any, what were some of like the best times or the things that you learned the most while either playing basketball there or taking your time there academically?
So I'll give you kind of the two points that kind of first come to mind. And
yeah.
One, athletically, I'd be, you know, remiss to say or mention if I, or I would, I'd be like stupid if I didn't mention our, you know, state championship my sophomore yeah. year. One, like when I was growing up, like all I wanted to do was play for my dad. And like, I would be the annoying little 8-year-old at the end of a bench with all the St. Ed's gear on. And, you know, I was that kid up until 8th grade. You know, I think people probably were like, is this kid ever going to grow up?
Yeah. God, this kid's still not here.
Yeah, no, I know. That's the people were probably waiting for me to get there. And then once I got there, waiting for me to get out. But it was, I was like that kid that just kind of was waiting for, you know, high school. And then it came and it went quick. But my sophomore year, we won a state championship. I was on the team. I didn't play much, but I was on the team. I'll say that. And it was just a special moment. You know, my father's only won 2 state championships. He's been there for 20 plus years. And, you know, he's been very successful, but, you know, winning a state championship in anything is very difficult. And I think, but I have personal bias, I think basketball is probably the hardest one to do. And doing that with him, it's just a moment. Like I have a ton of pictures that I see on my time hop memories or Facebook memories that pop up. And it's cool moments I'll never forget. And then another basketball memory is, you know, playing with my brother who I, you know, didn't know at the time I would play with him in college, but my senior year, as a sophomore, dressed a few big games on varsity. And just having that, you know, my father on the sidelines, my brother, you know, on the bench with me. And then, you know, my entire dad's side of the family went to St. Ed's, and, you know, they'd all go to every game, and, you know, they're extremely supportive, it was just a family type atmosphere.
So awesome.
It was awesome. And another, you know, getting away from the athletic standpoint, I think one thing is just, you probably felt the same way going to St. Ignatius, is it's being an all boys school. You have, I think, such a tighter community and tighter relationships, I would say, because you're with the same people for 4 years, every single day. And like, I didn't care what I looked like. Nobody really cared what you looked like. You'd go in and you'd be yourself. And I think that's the best part about it. And like you said, it's a rigorous school and a lot is expected of you. So everyone's pushing themselves to be, you know, I'm going to be better than you at this workout, at this, you know, in school, like, what did you get? Like, it was always competitive, but it was a friendly competition that I think, you know, we still talk about as, you know, a few of my friends from high school, we still talk about it to this day, is how we kind of just pushed each other in high school to be a little bit better every day. And, you know, at the end, it kind of, you know, worked out for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. It is, it's like a brotherhood of just constantly pushing to grow and develop, you know, in any way, whether it's on the court, whether it's in the classroom and all of the different aspects that encompass a human being, for sure. Sean, 100%. You mentioned that you're 5'8". for anyone who has a basketball mind or understands how big many basketball players are, people will know that that's a pretty big challenge for you. So what did you do to overcome that? How you were extremely successful at it too. I mean, to be able to play at a rigorous school like St. Ed's, who has great sports, and then to be able to play at Carroll too. Like, how did you overcome that? And what were kind of your mentalities towards that?
I get a similar question like this a lot. And I just kind of say, like, I never really thought of it as a deficiency or as a, you know, a negative aspect to me. You know, obviously it's the first thing people notice when you walk into a gym is, oh, hey, like the 7-footer is probably the guy that's going to be the best player, but maybe not. Like, and I never really looked at it as, you know, height, you know, measurements and stuff like that. You know, yeah. I always not necessarily took it as a challenge, but, you know, it was fun for me to be, and this is cliche, but like for people to doubt my ability. And, you know, I wasn't always, you know, the strongest, the fastest, but I, you know, I try to control the things that I could, which was, you know, how hard I played, but, you know, how hard I worked, you know, my toughness, my attitude. And I think, you know, for me, what was the coolest part was, you know, little kids like kind of coming up to you and being like, hey, like, I can relate to you a little bit more than I could the 6'5" and high and tallers. And, you know, some people might think that's funny or think that it's like a, you know, a knock that kids might come up to you. But like, to me, that was like the best thing ever is like, people are actually, I'm a, like you said, I'm a 5'8" white kid in a school that's dominated by, you know, great athletes and, you know, great players. And, you know, I had people coming up to me of all people on our team and asking me, you know, for drills or workouts. And that was basically, once I started realizing that, then it was kind of like a reassurance that like, okay, like I could play, I could do this, you know, maybe not at the highest of levels, but I could find a spot and I could, you know, I could be pretty successful at it. So I never really thought of it as a negative component. And I just kind of used it as more of a working mentality, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, that's tremendous. Cause you had to have grinded at a level that was really like more than other people. And that's so cool. And that's what people noticed and loved about watching you. You know what I mean? Like these kids that are coming up to you, they're like, there's something about this kid. Like that's very tangible and clearly you're making things happen. So like, I want to be like this guy. Like, that's cool. That is so cool. I think it's, I mean, it's, there's, you're more run of the mill than the 7-footer. Like that's you, the 7-footer. Like, right. I mean, come on, how many people do you know that are 7 feet? You know what I'm saying? Like,
literally though. You're right. Yeah. You're right. It's cool. I mean, like you said, like you can relate to a 5'10", 5'9", 5'8" kid more than you can relate to a 7-footer. And I think the more I realized that, it was just like, oh, okay. Like anyone can do this. Anyone could be out here. And I think more people saw that and, you know, realized the same thing. So, like I said before, I never really thought of it when I first started playing. Obviously, as I go on and guys get taller, stronger, we get older, you start to see it more. But at that point, after being involved in basketball for so long and playing the game for so long, I just felt like I belonged already. And wherever I went, I'd be fine.
So cool. And Sean, when you went on to Carroll, I remember specifically, I think it was your senior year. And I remember you at one point, and I hope I don't butcher this, but I believe that you had the highest assist to turnover ratio in all of the NCAA, AA. Is that right? Like, am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, that happened one time. That did.
Time, and you say it like a bachelor, which I get, but seriously, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it's not like, there's plenty of players on the NCAA and you held that record, which is impressive. And again, a testimony to that point guard mind that you had.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate you bringing it up because it's one of the cool accolades I have, but yeah, obviously like that specific statistic is like a team oriented statistic, I think more individually, because I mean, I have to get an assist, which involves another person.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it was more of like, just like another thing up until like it actually happened. It was funny because throughout the NCAA, like our tournament, our season was all done. The NCAA tournament was still going on. And I remember people like texting me like, hey, like, you're still in the lead for this. You know, there's other guy. I remember he was went to Michigan. Like, I can't remember his name, but he was a Michigan player. And everyone's like, oh, he's catching up on you, like type. But it was cool because like, why is someone comparing me to a Michigan basketball player right now?
Yeah, right.
That was like one of those like, okay, like this is pretty awesome. But once it happened, like it was just kind of one of those things where it's great, it's awesome and everything, but it's one of those things, like I said before, it's a team-oriented statistic. And without people around me, without great coaches, without great players, without great teammates, it can never have been accomplished. So that, what I'm most proud of is that like the people around me really made me feel appreciated because of that, which was cool.
Yeah, I mean, also though too, Sean, to turn it over, it doesn't take much for the guy that's going to have the ball in his hands the most. It doesn't take a team to turn it over. I mean, you lose your dribble, you make an errant pass, anything, and you're getting a quick turnover. So that's really awesome. And it's cool because you've put so much time into it. And that's a very tangible result that you had almost towards the end of your playing career. You know, like how that's a cool way to go out.
It is. No, I think I got a plaque. I think it's at home somewhere back in Cleveland, but it's something I'll always have and no one can take away from me. So it's another cool thing that I could say, you know, people still say to me here at Xavier, like, yeah, he led the nation in a statistic. And really? Then, yeah, they'll say it in like a little introduction thing for camps and stuff. And kids are like, oh my God, like, that's the greatest player of all time. Like, no, I played Division III basketball. It wasn't that awesome, but still, like, it's just a cool feature that I will, you know, always have with me. And it's pretty awesome to, like I said, be recognized with, you know, the entire NCAA, not just, you know, a specific division or, you know, conference. So it's a pretty awesome, you know, feature.
And I kind of took you right to the end of your Carroll time. Is there anything you want to say about hooping at Carroll? And you, like you said, you came over from Gannon after just a couple little bit, and then you played the whole time, and you guys were also, again, very successful at Carroll. So
yeah. No, I think I could talk about John Carroll, John Carroll basketball for hours.
Let's hear it.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, the first things that come to my mind is just like the relationships I still have with everyone I played with. Not like there's not a single person I could go down the list of that I played with that I, you know, don't stay in touch a little bit with today, or I go home and I'll see them. And we have group chats still, and we use Snapchat to stay in touch. Like, we're always staying in touch. And it's not like, I'm not saying that because that's me that's doing it. Like, it's everybody. It's the entire, you know, 15 guys that we had, or 18 guys. We had so many guys on our team, but it's the relationships that, you know, we built with each other. And obviously the success was awesome. I think my junior year, we were like 500, but that was one of the more, I can't say fun years, but like, it was like carefree almost. And maybe that was bad looking back at it. but it was like, maybe not much was expected of us that season. And, you know, we kind of just rolled with the punches type thing. And my junior and senior year were some of the closest teams and groups of people I've ever been a part of. And like I said, to this day, we still stay in touch. You know, we still talk, we still hang out on the weekends. And my brother, you know, played with me my last 2 years, and you know, he's a big part of why, you know, I still talk to some of those guys. But the relationships is the biggest part, you know, the biggest takeaway from my standpoint and in my basketball experience at John Carroll.
Being in that gym was electrifying when you guys were at home. I mean, especially when like it was getting towards the end of the year, or if it was a big game like against Mount or something, that gym was full and it was loud. And what's it like playing for crowds like that? Because both St. Ed's has a great fan base and both Carroll has a great fan base. And though again, small high schools are high schools, but though the college is small, it is, again, you said the outreach is big. And even in that gym, it doesn't feel like it's just a couple thousand people in there.
It's awesome. It's like, we would hate going into like Tuesday or Wednesday games we played, and we just knew like, man, people have homework finals this week or something, and we're not going to get many people. And you still see, like, the credit to the fans, you'd still see, you know, 200 people in there at least, and they would be loud and you'd hear them. But like when it got packed for the OAC tournament, I remember that was like the championship against Ohio Northern, I believe. That was one of the craziest experiences. Like, I can't even remember what happened in that game just because everything was so loud and it was so hectic. But you know, the community, like we've talked about with John Carroll, is so tight. You know, everybody, you know, you hear this a lot with small schools, everybody knows everybody, but it was almost like you either know of him or her, or you know the him or her. And it was like, if you didn't, well, he knows, like my friend knows him or her that knows. It was just a bunch of people that, you know, were close. And I think that's what made it so awesome. And then just, you know, being on that floor and some of those moments is, it's just hard to describe and to put into words, because it's like you said, it's surreal in the fact that you almost, like, I'm a very emotional basketball player. I was, I kind of showed it, I think, sometimes, like, you know, I would, you know, talk sometimes to other players and, you know, get into it a little bit, but that was me having fun in the game. Yeah. And I think the biggest part of that, or biggest reason as to that, is, you know, the environment and the community that, you know, provided that experience. And I fed off that. And I think a lot of the players feed off that. And, you know, to any fans that are listening to this, John Carroll or basketball fans or sports fans, like the players, they do understand and they feel that. And it's pretty awesome when they get to experience it.
I feel that, and from the fans' perspective, like, it's cool to sit four rows up and be like, oh yeah, like, I got theology with him, and then like oh yeah, Sean's been torching, you know, Ignatius for 4 years, and now he's torching and oh, now I get to root for him instead of against him and stuff like that. Like, like, it's interesting to be so close to the players and know their names, because, like, I mean, you go to a professional game, an NBA game, like, yeah, you know their names, they have no idea who you are, but it's, you flip that now for this, and it's like, we know you and you know us, and that's kind of cool. Like, that allows us to be a part of the game in a way that's far more integral than, like, even in the NBA, where it's just noise, really.
Like, absolutely. And that's, like, the big benefit to going to a smaller, or even just Division III, Division II, and some smaller Division Ones, is, you know, I keep saying community, but you have mm-hmm. those tight relationships with people. And, you know, there was times where I think I'd catch myself, for even like, you know, the Burgers or anyone on our team, you know, looking into the stands and kind of like having small conversations with people that
absolutely,
you know, we see on Tuesday and Thursday in class. And, but it's like I said, those are like the fun aspects of going to John Carroll and being at a Division III school that not many people get when you go to higher levels, and you don't really understand it until you're actually there in those experiences. And it might not look great, you know, going to a smaller school or going to a school that's, you know, not offering you a scholarship. However, you know, I wouldn't have traded it for another experience. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, once they, you know, start to realize that and they kind of get put in those positions, they probably feel the same way.
I like it. Yeah. Cause like I have a vivid memory of like this thought that I had one time. My buddy who goes to Dayton was at a bar one time, and Obi Toppin walked in, who now plays for the Knicks. And he like sent a picture of Obi, whatever. And I was like, oh, like Obi Toppin's at the bar. It's like, cool. Like, all right. Yeah. Like, he's at the bar. And then I'm like, I just remember having the thought, I'm like, how different is that than like, yeah, well, we all like go to house parties together, and like the whole basketball team, like we all like dap up and know each other. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, it's kind of an interesting thought. I'm like, okay, so yeah, you saw a guy at the bar. I'm like, yeah, like the basketball team has house parties, and like, we'll actually talk to you. Like, it's like different, like totally a different world, and still celebrating kind of that same joy though, like the game and the competitiveness. And that.
Yeah, 100%. I 100% agree. And obviously it's different. Like, they have a ton more fame and, you know, much better at basketball than, you know, we were and we are. But I think, you know, we probably party a little more than we probably should have, you know, as a basketball team. But it goes back, like, that was the fun part of it. And, you know, you could do that stuff and you could still be successful, and you could still, you know, wake up, not early the next day, but wake up the next day and, you know, get done what you had to do. But yeah, like we never thought, like, and as we shouldn't have, we never thought we were better or higher up than anybody because we play for a stupid Division III basketball team. Like, we are the same as everybody else. And I think, once again, it's what makes John Carroll special, is like, because you play football, because you play basketball, because you play sports or in clubs and stuff, like, you're not better than somebody. Like, you're not higher, you're not looked upon as better. And at the end of the day, you go out to the same places, you hang out at the same areas, go to the same house parties. Like, you guys are all friends, and you're all basically, when it comes down to it, the same type of people with similar interests.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true, dude. It's hard not to smile. You know what I mean? It's hard not mm-hmm. to smile. It's super cool when you think about it like that.
Absolutely. No. Like we said already, it went too quick, but it was a great experience.
Yeah. Amen to that. Amen. Yeah. You've been out long and I have. So, gosh.
I know. Don't remind me.
Sean, so this has led to, now you're at Xavier and you're studying, you're getting your master's, and you're the graduate assistant for the team. How did that come about for you? What has it been like? What do you do? Kind of let us in on this Xavier experience now, which is very similar, like, as a school to Carroll, from a school standpoint.
Which, to begin, like, it is 4,000 people at a Jesuit college and a small campus with a huge arena. For some reason, there's a 10,000 fan arena. There's more fans at our game than at the school, so it's funny. But anyways, yeah, I got here last summer, but in November, September-ish area of my senior year of college at John Carroll, I, you know, started reaching out to Division I schools primarily, I think I got a list of about like 45 schools with, you know, 5 emails per school of their basketball coaching staff, and
writ up a resume
and a cover letter, and, you know, sent it out to as many people as I could, just trying to get my name or my foot in the door and my name in the people's heads. And thankfully I brought up my dad before, but he's a well-connected man, and him and Coach Steele, who coaches at Xavier, is the head coach here. And they have a pretty close relationship, or a good relationship, I should say. And one thing led to another, and he offered me a spot as the graduate assistant. And I'm extremely thankful for that, because it's been an amazing experience. It's been, you know, it's hard at times, because you are, it's the first time I've been away, and it's a new challenge and everything, but it's been awesome. I mean, everything good I've done so far, I know everyone will say the past year has been crazy, which it has, but it's been one of the most important years of my life, just from a learning perspective and, you know, figuring myself out and what I want to do with my life, and getting a little deeper in there, but I'll kind of, you know, slow down or slow my roll a little bit. But what I do on a daily basis is basically, you know, I come in Monday to Friday, sometime usually Saturday and Sunday as well, 8 a.m. and get in the office and kind of see what needs to be done at first. And some things go from film to workouts every day. We have at least probably 4 hours of workouts that I have to be a part of, and I'm participating as like a rebounder, a defender, or a, you know, a token offense guy doing something. So I'm staying active with that, which is good. And then during the season, it's a lot of, you know, scouting preparation, and I'm practicing every day, which is, you know, it's a challenge of itself. And then going against these guys. But, you know, right now in the off season, we have camps going on. We have workouts every day, and, you know, I'm getting ready to come home this weekend, which will be a nice little break, but it's keeping me busy. I'm enjoying every moment of it and trying to, you know, make the most out of what I have left, which is, it's only a year has already gone by, which felt like a blink of an eye. And, oh yeah, I'm going to school.
Yeah. Somehow in there, like, I'm also doing that.
School's not hard. I shouldn't say it's not hard. It's not bad, is what I should have said. And it, thankfully for me, and people will laugh at this, but it's one class every 6 weeks. It's online. There's no meeting time. It's here's your assignments. We have about 3 or 4 a week. You get them in on time, you'll be fine.
Yeah,
so
cool.
Don't think I'm, you know, doing crazy things over here.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You're Einstein and you're Nate Robinson.
I wish I could be one of them. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. Yeah. Instead, you're both. So
that's awesome.
What do you think has been your biggest learning experience so far as kind of the graduate assistant? I mean, hooping with, like, I mean, these are guys that potentially could be going to league or G League or anything, like, right at that level. They're up there. So,
man, there's been so many.
Give us a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one, the first thing I noticed, probably within the first week or two of workouts and being here, was just the attention to detail that goes into a sport. You know, I played high school basketball and I played Division III basketball, and I can't say they weren't taken serious, because they were always serious, but, like, it's not, you don't have as much time as you have with these guys here at a Division I level. And the attention to detail by the coaches is incredible. You know, you focus on basically everything from their footwork on their catch, their finishes, the way they dribble, the way they shoot. And, you know, these things are repeated daily to these guys, so that they understand the importance of it. And it's pretty cool just to see the effort that the coaches put in. And then on the flip side, we talked about this a little bit prior, is just the amount of work and effort that the players put in is incredible. And I think people kind of underestimate it a little bit from the outside looking in, but you know, they're here, they get to go home probably a month out of the year, you know, combined. During the season, they get Christmas and maybe Christmas Eve, and that's it. And they're back here from October or September until the end of the season in March. So it's, I mean, people say, oh, you're getting your school paid for, you get up, but I mean, they have to be here. They're on top of their schoolwork. They have meetings, they have, you know, they have tutoring, they have practice and meals they have to be at. And it's a bunch of things that I think a lot of people initially say, like, oh, you should be grateful, which a lot of people are, they're grateful for it, but it's also, it's a grind for these kids. And It made me realize that, you know, I probably could have done more when I was younger and in college. Like I had more time than I had more things to do, to work on, and, you know, to get better at basketball, to work more on school, you know, to spend more time doing things and productive things rather than being lazy. But just overall, the work ethic that, you know, I've seen everybody around me have has been incredible and eye opening, and it makes me want to work harder. So
yeah,
it's been a blessing.
It is, because we always hear about it like, oh, it's like a job, you know, it's like a full time thing. And to see it like you're seeing it has to be really crazy. What how have you tried to emulate that work ethic maybe in other aspects of your life, or what kind of maybe like traits of that work ethic do you think are worth noting?
I think, you know, the biggest part for me was, I can't say living on my own, because, you know, I lived on my own in a house my junior and senior year, if you want to call it a house. But it's just kind of adjusting, the adjustment to being alone 3.5 hours away from, you know, my friends, my family, going into a new environment where I didn't know anybody. And, you know, like I said, the work ethic that they've shown and they've, you know, put off on a daily basis is so contagious and infectious that it makes you want to work harder. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is consistency. And, you know, I'll say the biggest thing as a coach, like the biggest thing you want to see out of your players is consistency, and, you know, they want the same in return. And so for me, it's just important to be the same person every day. You know, don't put on a fake face or whatever and be someone different one day, and then the next day, you know, be someone different again. It's, you should be the same person every day. And if you're going to be lazy, then I'm not going to trust you, and that's just who you are. But, you know, on a daily basis, you should be, you know, trying to prove something. And I'm only here for 2 years. So, you know, I think of it as it's a new opportunity every time I see these people, or even if I don't, I should be doing something, you know, productive or helping me out in a sense that will get me to where I want to be at some point. So, you know, I think the coaches have really done a great job with that, and the players as well. It's just learning from both of them and taking, you know, both aspects, you know, to heart basically, and just figuring out how I can make myself better and more like these people.
Yeah. Do you see yourself coaching down the line?
Yeah, I want to initially, I'll say this. Initially, I, you know, came in with the mindset I want to be like the highest level Division I basketball coach or NBA coach when I get older. And, you know, the more I see it, the more I think, like, I just, you know, I like the game. I love the game, and I want to coach wherever that may be. The great, as long as I can find a place. And ideally, after, you know, being here, I would like to be back home. But to me, I mean, 3.5 hours isn't like it's a crazy distance. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could turn into 5.5, one of these. I don't know how that will work. But like I said, I have another year left. I don't really want to, you know, think too much about that as of now. But my answer has always been, I don't see myself doing anything other than, you know, being a basketball coach or being involved in basketball or sports in general at some level. Mm-hmm. And for now, like I said, it's just kind of taking this next year, learning, you know, experiencing everything I can and figuring it out from there.
So cool. Yeah. It's nice to be present like that and just to appreciate it. And I think you can learn the most that way, instead of worrying and focusing so much on the future all the time. Like, it's going to come when it comes. It doesn't matter if you're ready or not. So when that time comes, you'll be ready anyway. And learning now is easier and better done more holistically when you pay attention to it.
Well, to add to that is, I think you said it best, is, you know, being in the moment and being present with what's going on is like the biggest, it's like the biggest characteristic trait that I think I want to have forever. Like, it's just like, as long as you could stay in the moment, or it doesn't necessarily have to be the moment, but in this day and what you have to do today, instead of worrying about, you know, tomorrow or months from now, years from now, whatever is on your mind in the future. If you could do that, I mean, and just take care of what you have on your plate right now, things will fall into place. You know, everything will be better. You won't have to worry tomorrow about what's going to happen in a month if you take care of what happens today. So I think that's been the biggest thing for me, just taking things day by day. And like we've said already, like, time flies. So if you don't do that, things are just going to happen so quickly that you won't know what to do.
Yeah. And you're spot on, man. Like, doing what you need to do today allows you to do what you need to do tomorrow. So, you know, like, especially too, I could imagine that this is almost inevitable for you as you continue your coaching time, especially at such a high level like this. Like, how cool would it be if, say, one of the guys on the team right now goes to the league and, you know, is starting for the Blazers or something, and you're like, you're watching him, you know, whatever, and you're like, you know, I remember when I was at Xavier and this guy or whatever was working on, and we were working on, you know, his footwork or whatever. Like, you'll remember that and appreciate that so much more vividly by being present and doing those things that you do.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's a great example, because I lived with Paul Scruggs, who is, you know, he's projected to go in the second round of the draft next year. So I lived with him for about four or five months. And it's just like, you know, when I first got here and I realized that, I'm like, oh my God, like, I gotta, you know, act a certain way. But then, like, you kind of become comfortable and you realize these are just people just like you. Yeah. And everything just becomes normal. But like you said, it's just one of those things where, you know, 5 years from now, and I see some of these guys on TV or wherever they may be, or maybe they hit me up with something, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like, I'll appreciate this. I already appreciated a lot, but when those moments have happened, it's definitely going to be a very surreal type feeling, and just one of those, yeah. like, appreciative, like, memories type thing.
For sure. It is. There's a certain nostalgia that comes with it, for sure.
Absolutely.
Sean, what would be your advice to up and coming basketball players? And anyway, however you want to take that, what would your kind of be your advice? You've seen it, you've done it, you know it, you grew up with it.
Yeah. My biggest thing to them, it would be, I can't say work hard, but, and I can't say be in the moment, because we already did that, but it would be something with just compete with yourself every day. And it doesn't have to be in a basketball setting. Like, it could be in a classroom, it could be with friends, it could be with your family, it could be in something just simple, but, you know, try to improve upon something every day, compete with yourself, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all creatures of habit. And, you know, my biggest thing is, I don't want to build bad habits. And the way we do that is, you know, starting on day one. You know, you do one thing one day, you do it the next, you do it again the next day. Like, you should always try to do something to improve yourself, you know, every single day, you know. And for me right now, you know, that may be watching a film or asking a coach, you know, what can I do to help? What can I do to, you know, make your life easier? As players, you know, up and coming players, it might be working on your skill work. It might be, you know, getting more shots up. It might be asking people to play one-on-one, but like I said, it doesn't have to be basketball. Just kind of find what you enjoy and then figure out, you know, how you can compete with yourself every day with that.
Yeah. Cool. So cool. It's always evolving that way too. Like, it allows you to analyze yourself and recognize kind of what, where you are and what you need to do and all that kind of thing. So Sean, too, your dad works with Team USA a little bit too. And that's like pretty unique and kind of an awesome experience. What's that about? And will you talk on about that just a little bit, and maybe let us in on some of this universal basketball that's going on there?
Yeah. So it's helped me out along the way. But for him, I think he's been doing USA type, even a job, volunteer, or whatever they call it. But he's been coaching there for around 15 to 20 years. And I want to say since like 2006 time, he's been an assistant coach for the like U16, U17, I believe, a team. And they do similar to what the pros do. And they travel out of the country every two or four years, or maybe it's every 2 years they go to the Americas Championships. And then every four, they go to a world championship. And I think he's won 2 gold medals with that. So he's been very successful. It's obviously nice being on the USA, which is the most dominant, you know, basketball country in the world.
Yeah, seriously.
So that helps. But for him, I know this July, they're going out of the country. I can't remember where, for another world championship. And I know he's excited. I know he loves it, because it's the highest level of high school basketball you can be at. You know, if you get to be a high school basketball coach and you want to do that for the rest of your life, well, the only way to keep improving is to expand your knowledge. And through that, you know, you do that at USA Basketball, where you have, you know, college coaches coming and talk to you, professional coaches coming and seeing the players. And then, obviously other high school coaches from around the country, you know, being there coaching alongside with him. You know, he's been able to obviously you know, prosper off of that, and people
yeah.
associate him now in the Cleveland area with United States basketball, which is pretty cool.
That is.
For me, I actually got out to go out there. I want to say my summer going into my freshman or summer going into my sophomore year of college, I went out there and spent a week out there as a USA like camp worker, not team camp worker type thing. And
yeah.
doing similar jobs as to what managers and basically what I do now is just either washing laundry, you know, rebounding, working kids out. But, you know, to the point of maybe not being such a highly looked upon person at that level, I, you know, I'm with the top 20 players in the entire United States at that age. And, you know, I remember the Nike Hoop Summit, which is along with USA Basketball that my dad did. I want to say probably 4 or 5 years. No, it had to be like 8 years ago now at this point, but guys like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
Oh my God.
There's a few others that, those are the first that come to mind. I can't, Luke Kennard, Alonzo, a few other guys, yeah. A lot of NBA guys that were on that team. And one of the game, one of their scrimmages, they asked me that they needed another body. So I played. And it was like, I vividly remember I was only in the game. We had like 8-7 guys. I got in for like probably 5 minutes because obvious reasons, I'm not the best player out there. Jaylen Brown closed out on me one time in the corner and I pump faked. And he literally, I kid you not, he jumped over me, jumped over my body.
Oh my God.
I ducked a little bit and then I just passed the ball right away because I was like, give me away from
my yeah, this is a different level.
But it's cool because obviously for him, like that's the highest level you can get at high school basketball. And that's my yeah. father. That's my high school coach. That's awesome. And that's what I want to get into in my career path. And it's how awesome is that, that I get to learn from someone that's been at the highest level at his profession.
For sure. For sure. And you have that accolade too. Now that Jaylen Brown just leaped over you.
Trust me. I tell that story as many times as I can when Jaylen Brown's name is brought up. So if you're around me, you'll hear that more. You'll hear that more often.
He's dude, he's like one of the smartest players in the NBA too. Like he's,
yeah,
there's something like I was just reading something about him that he, I don't know, like he something with Madison, I think it was, or like maybe some engineering or something. I don't know. Like he had different job options that he was going to debate doing instead of hooping. Like,
yeah, he's incredible. Crazy. Yeah, incredible athlete, basketball player. And then like probably, like you said, the smartest guy in the NBA who could do whatever he wants outside of basketball, but just so happens to be very good at basketball.
Yeah, like one of the best up and comers in the league, which is bonkers.
Wouldn't it be nice to have all that?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So Sean, you've gotten like awesome opportunities just through basketball and seeing it even from like an international level, then with your dad through Team USA. What is it about travel that you seem to enjoy so much? Why do many of these stories have a traveling aspect about them that is so crucial?
The biggest thing for me, and I think, just for me, in the initial standpoint and the thought process of it is, if I'm going to improve every day, like I said, that should be my goal, then I need to expand my knowledge. And, you know, as a player, I didn't really think of it like that. You know, I thought like, oh, I get to go travel. You know, I went to Ireland with John Carroll and, you know, we went to California with St. Ed's and I was just playing against different competition, different players. But now looking back at it, like, you see the way these guys play, how they carry themselves, you know, you see better players, different players, guys that you don't know about. And, you know, you learn from that, you know, you learn from those experiences, you learn from, you know, being away from home. And, you know, for me as a player, like I enjoyed that almost as much as I enjoyed, you know, the packed arena at, you know, St. Ed's or John Carroll, like that to me was almost just as fun. Yeah. And then as a, you know, a coaching perspective, it really just boils down to one, learning and expanding my knowledge, like I said, as a player. But, you know, as a coach, you need to do that consistently because, you know, it's such a competitive, you know, occupation, profession, mm-hmm. whatever. And if you're not, you know, doing something to improve, someone else is, and that's just kind of the mindset you have to have. And, you know, by doing that, you know, you need at this level, at the Division I level, yeah, really at any level, like there's only so much you can get from the same people.
True.
And what way can you do aside from traveling to see other, you know, coaches, players, you know, practices, it could be anything. It just intrigues me that, you know, I can learn so much just by simply, you know, being attentive, you know, around people and on people I don't know.
Yeah. So many people love to travel. And I think hopefully it's for the same reasons that you're sharing. It really is. It's an exposure thing. And it's, you get to see the beauty of different ideas and different perspectives and different areas and different natures that are of those places. So it's the same. And, you know, like with basketball too, the game's ever evolving. So you need to be ever evolving too. Like, I don't think Shaquille O'Neal ever thought that people were like Steph Curry were going to be in the NBA. Like, no one thought that, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
It's a game changer.
That's one of the biggest, you know, that's a great point in the evolution of basketball in itself is, you know, it started somewhere. And, you know, if you're the first person to find that or come up with it and then you start spreading it, then you look like the genius. So it's just taking, you know, and you'll hear this in all sports. It's like a copycat league or people are always copycats and taking things from other people. And, you know, you'll see something that you'll think is new, but at the end of the day, you just kind of twist it from somebody else. And it's just kind of, you know, you have to put yourself out there. You have to put the effort in if you want to see some results. And, you know, in that case, it may be traveling. It may be talking to people you're uncomfortable with. It may be, you know, doing things at a young age that you might not be able to do when you're 40 or 30 or whatever it may be. So yeah. And right now I have the time and I'm able to.
Yeah, absolutely. And cool. Yeah. So cool. And I'm trying to think about it like too, like, so California and Ireland and all these different places are, they're so vastly different too, which is cool. Like, it's not like you just got to travel within kind of the same realm a little bit. Like they're pretty different. So that's really cool. It epitomizes what you're talking about.
Yeah. And one of the more, Ireland I played and, you know, it was a great experience and it was more, can't say sightseeing. We only played two games. We were there for like 10 days. So it was almost a vacation, but it's yeah. Awesome. And it's something I'll never forget. But the one experience I had was in Las Vegas and I worked the NBA Summer League one of the summers going into college. And that was like the biggest like game changer for me. It's kind of when I realized I wanted to start, you know, not necessarily realized it, but when I was like, okay, like this is what I want to do, you know, be within sports, you know, one, because that was the first time I've been actually away from my family, away from Cleveland on my own for a month. And I was in Las Vegas of all places as I think I was 20, just 21 at that time. Oh, so I'm like, oh, I'm going to go whatever. But the thing is, I think I went out maybe once or twice and it was really the early on days. And then I started to realize, okay, like I need to, what are my priorities here? What do I need to do? And I learned, you know, so much about myself, so much about basketball. And it was just like a reassuring experience that, you know, I got to be at this high level and do this awesome thing. But at the same time, I'm focused on myself and able to see like, all right, this is my future, hopefully.
Yeah, it's a humble approach too. I mean, the more you keep developing yourself while you have all of these really highly acclaimed experiences, you're building quite the resume, Sean. You really are. I mean, the next coaching Flannery is up and coming for sure.
I appreciate that. I do have to say I owe a lot of it, you know, to my father who we've talked about, but his connections are crazy. So I have to use them. People will say, yeah, I might not, you know, be somewhere because I earned it. But you know, when I get there, I'll put in as much work or more work in the next person. So
it only gets you in the door, Sean, if that, or only gets you to talk about it. You got to do their ass, bro.
Damn right.
They don't show up for you every day. They don't get out of bed. They don't cook. Mm-hmm. They don't do all the stuff that you have to do to make sure that you're in good shape to go up against these D1 guys as the graduate assistant and pass all your classes. I mean,
yeah. You're not wrong. It's just experiences that you got to kind of take day by day and, you know, learn as you go. And thankfully, you know, I have great people around me that have been in similar experiences and I have, you know, been given great advice and just kind of learn, like I said, learning as I go and figuring myself out.
Yeah. Way to be with that. Something that I wanted to touch on kind of as we near the end here is your own podcast, Courting the Field. Do you want to talk a little bit about Courting the Field and how that started and what you guys do? I mean, it's a really great podcast. It's always entertaining every time I tune in. So
I appreciate it. Absolutely. Yeah. We found out we have a listener today, so that's awesome. We got one, but no, I do it alongside a co-host of mine, Carl Jones, a longtime friend. We actually, I want to say we met playing basketball in like fifth or sixth grade, and he's from Bedford. We never really knew each other. And then we went to the same high school. Became really close in high school, and we always went back and forth about sports with each other, as we did with a bunch of people in high school, and stayed close throughout college. He went to Syracuse to play football, where he had a great career. I obviously went to John Carroll, but we always stayed in touch. And just one day we always talked about one day, starting some podcast or, being on TV together as Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. But
yeah,
it worked out as, last year, obviously with all the COVID stuff during quarantine, it was perfect timing, to start something up. And, we kind of talk all things sports, we kind of keep it centralized with football and basketball. However, we just like to have fun on it. We have a few guests on here and there. We're not as active as probably we should be. However, when we do get on, we like to, like I said, have a good time. We have people that are usually Cleveland natives, Cleveland area natives. However, we've had a few NFL guys on that are played football at Syracuse with CJ. And hopefully in the future, we're trying to get in a couple more coaches that, I've made connections with here and there. And then just kind of expand and stay connected. I think it's a great thing that you're doing. It's awesome. And it's a credit to yourself that you're doing it by yourself. It's not easy. And it takes time out of your day and it takes effort. And I assume you're not getting paid great money for it.
So. Well, thank you. So, yeah, definitely not. But
it's a cool thing that, sometimes I go into it not thinking, all great about it. But then once I do it, I'm glad I had the conversation. And it's just another type of networking experience that you can add. And it's another resume builder as well.
That's true. Yeah. It's these conversations are always like a highlight of my day. Any day that I have an interview set up, I'm like, oh, let's go. Like, I get excited about it. I look forward to it. And the conversations are always so fruitful. So,
It's great. It's great hearing other people's, experiences, side of stories and everything. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. It's a cool time to be in sports too, because so many people are into it, even if they're not like following it. Like when we grew up, it was mostly like, you watch the games and you had the cards. Now it's like, you see the highlights, like Blake Griffin dunking over the Kia and whatever that was, 2012. Like,
yeah,
I just remember that plastered on every social media site. So that was like right at the start of when Instagram was big too. Like I think that was in 2010 when it came out, Instagram. So it's like stuff like that is what we get now. We get all this stuff through social media and sports. So people don't have to be these avid followers like we were when we were kids to stay on top of it. Like, you see all the highlights. Absolutely. On Twitter, on Instagram, whatever.
Absolutely. And it's cool. Funny because, one, without the sports last year during COVID and everything, I think people almost went insane because of what was going on during a pandemic, but also because you didn't really have an outlet for a break from reality. And I think that's kind of what we all like about sports. It's like, it's kind of, it's surreal. It's not a reality for all of us. We don't get to, going back to height talking, we don't get to be all be 6'11" and gifted athletically. And it's just a break from reality for us. And, fortunately for me, what you guys and what everybody seems to enjoy about sports, I actually get to live out on a daily basis and, be involved in that firsthand. And, to me, it just adds to my experience of why I like it so much and I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're really true. And it's unifying because we can all relate to different parts of it. It's not a thing that is static quo for everyone, like it is definitely always evolving for each person. Sean, did I lose you? I think I lost you.